from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
I'm here sitting and looking at my phone, you know, doing what I'm doing.
I'm like, ball?
Yeah, reading my phone, zoned out. Looking at Twitter, and the music's playing. It is what it is. I'm like, wait a minute. The music's playing. That means I'm probably supposed to be on the air. Although I was reading all about Jahan Dotson. I don't understand how the Steelers weren't in on a deal like that. But we're, you know. These are the deals that happen now at the end of training camp. Anyway, here is John Perotto. How you doing, John?
Doing good, Paul. How are you?
I'm good. I'm doing really well. Sometimes doing a radio show gets in the middle of, you know, trying to read my phone and see what's going on the internet. And that's what...
Multitasking.
Multitasking is never good. John, yesterday we saw what was probably one of the worst performances hitting-wise for the Pirates of the year, and that's saying a whole lot given how bad they've been. But when you strike out 16 times and you leave, 10, 11 guys on base, and all the other stuff that happened yesterday and lose 1-0, I mean, it's easy to blame David Bednar, but... This is a game that the Pirates basically have nobody else to blame but themselves because they can't hit.
Yeah, for sure. Like you said, 10 men left on base, 16 strikeouts. They were, I think, 0-for-8, if I remember correctly, with runners in scoring position. And, you know, all they needed was one big hit in that game, just one, and they would have won the game. And, yeah, like you said, you know, everyone can blame it on Bednar, and, yeah, he did give up the run to lose the game, but the offense was just terrible, and it's too bad because this Domingo Germán start, for me, came out of nowhere. I didn't see him pitching 6 shutout innings, and to waste that kind of effort is frustrating, for everybody.
Yeah, it is. Bednar, though, to me, I don't know what's next for them with that, with respect to that.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, there's not much more they can do for him, is there?
Not really. I mean, you know, he was on the this has been a weird season for him. You know, he got hurt in spring training. He only pitched twice right at the end of the Grapefruit League season there in Bradenton. Wasn't available opening day, which made me wonder why he didn't start the season on the injured list. And it just seems like even when he had that string of like 19 or 20 saves in a row, he never seemed like the same pitcher he was the previous three seasons. And I don't know if he's hurt or it's just a case of he just having a bad year, is as simple as that. Or is it to the point in his career where he's starting to lose some effectiveness? And, you know, that's going to be a decision the Pirates are going to have to make, or an evaluation that they're going to have to make in the offseason, Paul. Is David Bednar maybe as hard as it is to believe already, but, I mean, he is 29. Maybe he is starting on the downside of his career, and, you know, that they feel they need to bring him back or go in a different direction as a closer. And I realize, you know, it would be a very unpopular decision if they decided to take him out of the closer's role, because he is such a fan favorite here in Pittsburgh, and justifiably so. But I don't know. It's not an easy question to answer.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing. Like, Bednar, now, John, you know, we've seen a lot of times where they say, you know, guys that throw hard, those hard-throwing relievers, whatever you want to call them, you know, they have a season sprinkled in here and there where they just, their arm is never right, you know, and you see that where guys are dominant for 2 or 3 years and then they got a season where they take a step back. Could that be what's going on with Bednar?
Yeah, I think it could be, very much so. I mean, yeah, I mean, he's still young enough. You don't think, I mean, I could see, was one thing if you were 34 or 35 where you'd say, well, maybe he's, you know, just getting at the end of the line. I don't think at 29 he's at the end of the line. I just think he's had, you know, I'd chalk it up to he's having a bad year, but I do think that he's never been totally right from a physical standpoint all year. And he's probably pitched through a few more things than he's let on, because he's not the type of person that's going to complain, not the type of guy who will easily say, hey, I want to go on the injured list. He wants the ball. And, you know, it's just been a tough year for him. And, you know, maybe you take him out of the closer's role for a while and let him get right. But it's just it's a really interesting situation, what's going on there. And, you know, he starts to make some decent money this year in arbitration, this upcoming offseason, I should say. So the Pirates, they have a lot to think about with David Bednar here in the next few months.
Well, and I think, John, I mean, what are they, 8.5, 9 games out now? I mean, it's pretty much over. I mean, let's face it, we can you know, come with these flights of fantasy that they're going to go on a long winning streak and get back into it, but time's running out. Are they getting close to a point where a guy like Bednar, even a guy like Skeens, and come with a couple of these other players, where you just kind of shut them down a little bit for the rest of the year?
Well, I know they, in a perfect world, they would like Skeens to pitch through the end of the season. Now, probably on a modified schedule, where maybe he would skip a start or get a couple extra days rest, or maybe have shortened starts, kind of like what the Chicago White Sox are doing with Garrett Crochet now. He's only pitching like 4 innings at a time. But they want Skeens to experience a full, what it's like to go through a full season. So, you know, again, that's another tricky situation for the Pirates too. I mean, do you want him to keep pitching and risk injury, or how exactly do you set his schedule up? And there isn't really a set formula for that. And it's kind of more art than science, as far as getting a feel for, you know, how he's feeling and how he's holding up physically. So that's something else that'll be interesting to track here in the last five and a half weeks of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing, is that you have to figure out now, why have they, John, not started to bring up the Nick Yorks and the Henry Davises and the guys who might actually be a part of their future? Why do we have to continue to watch some of the guys they keep running out there every single day? It almost doesn't make sense to me at this point.
You know, I don't understand that either, and hopefully Ben Cherington will be available to the media on this homestand. It starts tonight, some point on this homestand, because the Billy McKinney call up the other day, I mean, Billy McKinney's a journeyman. He's, I think, 29 now. And to call him up when you're pretty much out of the race instead of calling up a Nick York or a Billy Cook, who you both guys at the trading deadline, or bring Henry Davis back up for that matter. It just made no sense to me that you would bring a guy up who clearly, in my estimation, and I think the estimation of pretty much everyone else, isn't a part of the future. And it just was very baffling, the move that was made. And, you know, I'd like to hear Ben Cherington's side of it, why they decided to bring Billy McKinney up rather than a younger player.
You think there's any chance at all if the Pirates can get Ke'Bryan Hayes back to the point where he's reasonably healthy, maybe he plays the last two or three weeks of the season and shows, you know, that he hits a little bit and shows that he's healthy again? Do you think there's any chance they would try and trade him in the offseason?
I think they would, but they'd be trading low on him. And I think, other than the fact that somebody would take on that contract, which for the Pirates is a big contract, $70 million, but for a lot of teams, it's a reasonable amount that they would be probably willing to take on. My concern about Ke'Bryan Hayes, and I've had this for a couple of years now, and I've written this on more than one occasion, is, you know, back problems are usually persistent, and a lot of times they're chronic. And I just wonder if Ke'Bryan Hayes' back issue is chronic, and if it's going to reach the point where he's going to need to have surgery to get right. And, you know, that's not an easy thing to go through, even today with the discectomies and the different kinds of surgeries now that are available on backs. It's still a serious surgery. And I just wonder if this is going to keep hampering him through the rest of his career. And, you know, it has for pretty much 3 years now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. To me, I mean, if you have this Isaiah Kiner Falefa, he can be your third baseman, and you got Nick Gonzalez, he can be your second baseman. Triola's sort of your, whatever you want to call him, utility guy. I mean, it kind of makes Ke'Bryan Hayes expendable and frees up some money that you may be able to spend. If you think about it, John, they're not going to re-sign Chapman. They're probably not going to re-sign Tellez. And if you trade Ke'Bryan Hayes, you basically have $20 million from this year's payroll to spend, you know, that you, on players next year.
Yeah, it would definitely free up some money if they traded Hayes. And I don't know, it just seems, you can tell that there's something wrong with Ke'Bryan. I mean, I've had that feeling all year. He's a quiet guy by nature, so it's a little hard to read his emotions, but he's just looked all season like something been weighing on him. Just and I think obviously now we've probably found out what it is his back has been bothering him probably more than he lets on, because, you know, he's not a guy that makes excuses. He's not a guy that's going to easily come out of the lineup. I mean, he may be quiet and soft-spoken, but he's a tough kid, and I think he's really tried to play through a lot of stuff this year, and it's just really hindered him to the point where he's just not been a productive player at all. He only has, what, 4 home runs? He's hitting right. 250. And, I mean, he's better than that. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, but I certainly think he's a better player than what he's shown this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the thing with that. I mean, to me, these are some of the decisions they're going to have to make going into next year. I it feels like if York is your center fielder, you have your, you know, De La Cruz, York, and Reynolds as your outfielders. But what exactly do they have in De La Cruz?
You know, that's the question. I mean, he's never been a good on-base percentage guy. He does have power. And he's an okay outfielder, certainly not a good or really good outfielder, but he's not terrible. So I think what they're hoping is he's 27, and I think they're hoping that his power keeps blossoming and he can turn into a 30 home run guy, even if he has a low on base percentage. If he pops 25 or 30 homers, then he's helped your offense. So, you know, I think it's interesting. you know, the Pirates didn't have to give up a whole lot to get him. A couple of prospects who were like in the 20 to 30 range in their system. So obviously the Marlins didn't value him real highly. So I think it was one of those, you take a shot on him and see if you can untap his power. And if it doesn't work, it's not like you've given up a whole lot to get him. So it was really, I don't want to say risk-free move, but it was a low-risk move to get him. And I think he'll be back next year. I mean, this will be his first year arbitration, so he'll only probably make about $2 million next year. So I think they'll bring him back and give him a longer look next year and see what they have in him over the long haul.
Yeah, I just think that's, you know, one of those questions where you bring him in, and I mean, has he really been better than Edward Olivares or, you know, pretty much any other guys that they were trying to replace with him?
Not really. I mean, to be honest, I mean, he finally had a big hit the other night, and even then it wasn't like a really hard hit ball. It was kind of a blooper that fell in for it was a two-run single. I feel bad for the guy because, you know, he speaks limited English, so we haven't had like any kind of long conversation, but he seems like a wonderful guy, and he's always smiling and happy. And I know we did talk, and he's very disappointed in himself to not be able to make a better contribution to the team. I think he's pressed. I think he's he's just really put a lot of pressure on himself, especially, you know, he came over here and they were in contention. Now, very quickly after he came over, they dropped out of contention. And the fact that he didn't hit certainly played a role in that 10-game losing streak they had, earlier this month.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of things that have to be answered, John, in going into this offseason. I'll tell you another thing. It starts with, do you bring back the general manager and manager? And I think we know that Bob Nutting will definitely bring back the general manager, but if he's looking for a sacrificial lamb, could it be the manager that's the sacrificial lamb?
You know, that's a great question. Bob Nutting's very conservative, especially when it comes to making moves of that stature, of that gravity. I think he'll be back next year. That's just I would like to think somewhat educated guess that they'll be back. I think unless it just totally goes completely terrible in September, I do think that they'll bring Derek Shelton back for one more year, because really this is the first year there's been any expectations. And I think deep down, I don't think they felt they were a playoff team. I know they said they were going to contend and what have you, but I do think that they'll be back for one more year. And again, I mean, I'm going to preface this by saying if things go really, really bad, if they have a terrible September, I think that could change. But I would be surprised if they're not both here for at least one more year.
Well, I mean, I think if you look at it, that's true. And the one thing that helps a little bit is their schedule gets, you know, a little easier than what it's been, obviously. But the thing I would caution people that are just looking at records of teams they're playing a lot of games against the Cubs, the Reds, and the Cardinals. Those are all division games, so you kind of feel like, you know, they're probably going to be .500 in those games, right? I mean, they're all tough games, right?
They are. And I mean, you know, they do have the Nationals, and, you know, I know the Royals come in, but the Royals aren't an easy mark anymore. They're right in contention in the American League Central. If it were another owner, I would say maybe they were in greater jeopardy than they are, Charrington and Shelton. But I just know how patient Nutting is. I can remember when Jim Tracy was managing here and Dave Littlefield got fired as manager and he brought Neil Huntington in, and Nutting really pushed to keep Tracy, but Huntington felt that they needed a new starter. At the very least, they needed to make changes to the coaching staff. So it kind of tells you the type of loyalty or stubbornness, however you want to look at it. I guess you can look at it either way, that Nutting has. But he's not a big guy for making changes. If you look at some of his other businesses, his newspaper business, a lot of his top executives have been with the company for literally ever. So he's pretty slow to make change, and I think I'm going to take that track record into thinking that that's why I think that the management team will be back next season.
Yeah, well, you know, on a different note, we've got Saturday, guys that you're very familiar with that you covered and you got to know getting honored in Bonds, Sangin and Jim Leland. It's going to be an interesting day. The thing that we have been asking all week, what do you think the reception for Barry Bonds is going to be like?
That's a great question. I've thought about this a lot, probably more than I should think about. I probably should be thinking about other things too. But I think it's going to be good. You know, time heals all wounds. And, you know, it's been 32 years since he played here. And I mean, he was a great player here. He won two MVPs. He should have won three MVPs. He should also, he won in 90 and 92. He should have been the MVP in 91. You know, one of the narratives, and I wrote about this in Pittsburgh Baseball Now, pardon a shameless plug, today is everyone always says he couldn't wait to get out of Pittsburgh. And that's not true. I've talked to him that last year he was in Pittsburgh. He was willing to at least talk to the Pirates and see what they might offer. And he's anytime I run into him over the years, even since he's retired, I see him once in a great while somewhere. He'll always remember fondly his years here in Pittsburgh and the fans and Leland and what have you. So, you know, I hope that animosity has gone away. And I hope the fans realize that it took two there. The Pirates never made Barry an offer. So, I mean, it wasn't like he just willingly walked away. I mean, if somebody doesn't want you, it's time to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the big thing. But I read your article. Did I read this right? That he wanted 5 years, $25 million?
Yeah, which at the time would have been the biggest contract in baseball history, but he ended up getting 6 years and $43.75 million from the Giants. And when you see what he went on and did for those next 5 years, even at that high salary at that time, he would have been a bargain. I mean, he was, in my mind, you know, I know people saying Ken Griffey Jr., but I think Bonds was the equal of Ken Griffey Jr. at that time. And if he wasn't the best player in baseball, he was 1A.
Well, I would just say basically the other part of it is think about how different contracts are nowadays.
Yeah.
5 years, $25 million now. I mean, what is Ohtani making, like 60 or $70 million for one season?
Yeah, $700 million in 10 years. And, you know, like Bonds won at $25 million. Brian Reynolds has a $106 million contract. Brian Hayes has a $70 million contract. So it's really, when you put it in context between 92 and 2024, it seems almost comical to think that here's a guy who has the most home runs of any player in big league history, and he wanted $25 million, which was now would be laughable. He would make that much in half a season.
Right. No, there's no question. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing is that the money has changed so dramatically in baseball just a couple of decades. What does Jim Leland mean to the Pirates organization?
I think a lot. And I mean, you know, he took over Paul and after the 85 season, they had had the drug trials. They had almost moved out of town. You know, there were rumors they were going to Denver. There were rumors they were going to New Orleans. And he came into a really bad situation with a lot of veterans who didn't want to be here anymore. And a lot of young kids that were raw. And even though they lost 98 games that first year in 86, they were at least a competitive representative big league team. And he took that franchise and within within 2 years at the end of 87, they were pretty competitive. And then they win the division title in 90, 91, and 92. And they haven't won a division title since. But I think what really resonates with Pirate fans, with Jim, is, you know, he married a girl from here. He's lived here ever since he was the Pirate manager. He did, even when he was managing the Tigers, he still made his offseason home here in Pittsburgh. And he really became a true Pittsburgher. And I think a lot of people, he's been here so long and such part of the fabric of the community, that I think sometimes people forget that he isn't a native Pittsburgher. He's from Perrysburg, Ohio, which is right outside of Toledo. But he's been here so long that it seems like he's been here his whole life. And I think that really, really resonates with Western Pennsylvanians and Pirate fans.
Yeah, I think that's the thing about it. You know, the only thing I always say is he was not able to ultimately deliver the World Series. That's the only the hole in the resume, right?
Yeah, that is. And you know, I know that this to this day, even all these years later, that's the one thing that gnaws at him when he looks back at his career. And I think that's the biggest regret he had, that they couldn't win a World Series after, you know, winning the division 3 years in a row and losing in a National League Championship Series. And, you know, he even alluded to it in his Hall of Fame speech in Cooperstown last month, where he said, we had a lot of good times, but I also know we broke a lot of hearts in Pittsburgh. And I do believe that, you know, he won one in Florida, but I think if you shot him with truth serum and said, where would you have liked to have won a World Series? I think Pittsburgh would be his answer.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, I think that's the biggest thing with him is that, so it's him and Zan Guillen and Barry Bonds. Should be a great night. Tonight, last one for you. Tonight, John, it's Paul Skeens night, right? I'm pretty sure tonight is Paul Skeens night. So how many more of these are we going to see before the end of the year?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we're going to see a few more, but I do think they're going to, now that, like you said, they're out of contention, I think they'll probably be conservative with how they use him the rest of the year. They may skip a start. They may limit his innings, and maybe he starts and he only pitches 3 or 4 or 5 innings. But there'll still be a few left. But I kind of noticed, even as big a drawing card as he is, when he pitched last Friday against Seattle, the crowd wasn't nearly as big as it had been. So, the Pirates have to realize, like, they can't just put him on the mound and they're going to draw a lot of people. They need to be competitive, too. But we'll see what happens here. It's, one of the things still to follow here in the last few weeks of the season.
All right, John, thank you so much, my man. And hopefully, we'll see you soon.
Sounds good, Paul. Thanks for having me.
All right,
Jason Bay, all-star.
Yeah, there you go. That's John Parrotto, obviously a great baseball writer. He's been around for a long, long time. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia, Peters Township. Visit them, southhillskia.net. Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm, where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And the fan hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. I'm pretty excited about this. Inside Camp Aliquippa, presented by Saloni's Italian Bread, debuts KDK High School Sports YouTube channel, a behind-the-scenes look at one of the most powerful high school football programs in the state. City Limits, that was Ben Tenuta's work.
Yeah, him and Zangrilli put that together.
And I'm sure it's going to be incredible. He's a really talented young guy when it comes to the photography and all that other stuff. Celebrate the start of the football, at the kickoff and rib festival presented by Icy Light August 29th through the September 2nd. At Acrisure Stadium, admissions free, national rib vendors, free concerts, football, and fun. Visit acrisurestadium.com/ribfest and join us for Labor Day weekend on the North Shore. You know, they do it every year for the Pitt, basically Labor Day weekend, and usually there's a Pitt game and some Pirate games. Do you make it a point every year to hit the Rib Fest at least once?
Not every year, but I've gone probably 4 or 5 times, yeah.
I don't know that there's been a single year where I don't get to the Rib Fest at least one day to get something to eat.
Or somebody at least will stop in my family and get
something.
You know
what I mean? Yeah. And the best thing is the street corn. Do you like that? Corn on the cob.
I love corn on the cob. I haven't had any corn on the cob this year, to think about it.
I've had some good corn on the cob. A friend of mine is actually a farmer.
There you go.
Chuck Moore. He grows some of the best corn on the cob I've ever eaten. In fact, I got to go down and hit him up for some more.
That's probably one of my favorite summertime foods.
Yeah.
Corn on the cob, watermelon. Summertime classics.
Absolutely.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Well, city limits. Little bit of breaking news as we were talking in the last segment. Celebrate the 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge Route 19 Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. And also the Chevy Summer Drive continues at Sun Chevrolet, up to $7,500 in rebates. Terms and conditions, sunchevy.com. High of 75 today, sunny skies. There was some breaking news, and of course, I kind of got sidetracked a little bit trying to figure out what exactly it was. But the Penguins have made a trade for Rutger McGroarty.
Rutger McGroarty.
According to Elliot Friedman.
But the bigger news is what the Penguins gave up.
Braden Yeager
is going to the Jets, the top prospect in the Penguins organization.
So, and apparently this guy is either the number one or number two prospect in the Jets organization. So, I think one of the things that is pretty clear to me is that this is a deal where maybe the Penguins were not quite as high on Yeager anymore. And maybe the Jets kind of felt like this McGroarty could use a little bit of a change of scenery.
I don't get it.
It's hard to know without, obviously, we're just the breaking news is literally just leaking out as we talk. But it sounds like the McGroarty kid is somebody who's close to being NHL ready. It sounds like he is sort of would you agree, just based on what I'm reading here? It's almost like he is sort of maybe a Michael Bunting type. Maybe a Brian Russ type, something like that? Is that, I mean, just based on what I'm reading.
Yeah, I'm trying to read more right now on the fly. Maybe I'll use my first Paul pause of the day.
Right.
So McGroarty announced he's going back to Michigan, where he's currently playing for the 2024-25 season. He announced that in April.
Okay.
Winnipeg offered him a contract to turn pro around the same time, but he hasn't signed an entry-level deal.
He said he wants to go straight to the NHL.
So can the Penguins, and I mean, McGroarty did say he had reservations about his future with Winnipeg earlier this offseason.
Right.
So could this trade signal he wants to play in the NHL and he actually will go and play for the Penguins this year? 52 points in 36 games last year at Michigan.
If the Penguins give him a contract, right, I would think if the Penguins decide that they're going to bring him, I mean, I can't imagine the Penguins do this deal without already knowing they're going to bring this kid to the NHL, right?
I would think so, yeah.
I mean, they're not necessarily going to be they're not necessarily just going to give up their top prospect for somebody that, you know, they might have to wait a year because he wants to play at Michigan one more year.
That's what's so surprising to me. Why Braden Jaeger being given up in this deal when you're trying to accumulate young players? That's the only explanation that I have for it. They think McGroarty is that much better than Jaeger.
Yeah, McGroarty's also young. I mean, he's also young. He's a little older than Jaeger, but
by a year. I mean, you're talking about a guy that's 20 and Jaeger's 19. Right. Not too much of a difference.
Both of them are young players. And I think that the big thing with this one is, if just reading it again, trying to read it real quick in between segments and whatnot, it sounds to me like the Penguins, I don't want to say soured a little bit on Jaeger, but maybe aren't quite as high on him now as they were when they drafted him.
That has to be the case. Or else, yeah. I mean, he signed an entry-level deal with the Penguins in July.
Right.
This was supposed to be the year that Braden Jaeger factored into, not, I wouldn't say the bottom six, maybe even one of your top forwards on the one of the first two lines with Crosby or Malkin. Possibly.
Yeah.
I would think that were the expectations for him. Not at the start of the year, but like a Brian Rust, like a Jake Guentzel, at some point in the middle of the year, work your way into the lineup as a top six winger.
Yeah. Well, again, it sounds to me like this McGroarty is going to probably be with the Penguins this year, like with the big club.
Well, unless he retracts his statement that he was going to Michigan, unless everything changed because he's now gone from the Winnipeg organization.
No, I mean, I'm just saying, it feels to me like that's what's going to happen.
I would think that potentially the Penguins got that assurance from him if they were going to make this
absolutely.
Deal.
Absolutely. They had to have.
That's what makes the most sense.
They're not going to get rid of that. They're just not. If they're not going to get rid of a guy like that and then say, well, we have to guess to figure out if this kid's going to come play or if he's going to play for Michigan a year. They're not going to do that.
I wonder if Kyle Dubas offered draft picks first. It was very firm in trying to make it draft picks instead of another player. You know, because draft picks, they're frugal. You can move them around, do whatever you want. You don't know who's going to hit.
Right.
Was Braden Jaeger a player who hit for them? Apparently not good enough from their standards of picking him 14 overall a couple years ago.
Right.
Where this guy's just clearly.
It is funny to me. Like I said, it is hilarious to me. When I see this, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of reaction and overreaction, right, about what this actually means. It seems pretty clear to me. And again, I've just kind of in the last 15 minutes this has come about. I would say that he is going to be a member of the Penguins on their NHL team this year, correct? Is that a fair statement?
I'd say so, yeah.
Yes, and then Jaeger's probably going to be the guy, goes to Winnipeg, and they're going to try maybe and see what they can, you know, if they can – whatever, maybe it might even be a situation of where he fits better with what Winnipeg does than he does with the Penguins, you know? And so they were willing to say, listen, we'll give you this guy who's our top prospect, or I think he's one or two in their system. We want your top prospect, and the Penguins were willing to do it because they just kind of soured a little bit. I don't know. It just is a weird deal right now. It really is.
I try to trust Jesse Marshall with all this in terms of prospect trades and stuff like that. And he's kind of putting out there right now that Jaeger's bound by the CHL-NHL transfer agreement. McGroarty was drafted out of the USN TDP. He's free of that agreement via his NCAA eligibility, although that may not matter with a lawsuit pending. So definitely a lot of further information to learn about McGroarty. I think it's McGroarty. That is also going to be Yinzer Paradise trying to pronounce that.
You know, Jesse Marshall, who, you know, follows hockey pretty clearly and covers it in this town, he seems to think it's a net win for the Penguins, that they did well in this trade. I mean, again, I don't know what we're basing that on other than maybe we like you know, the skill set a little better.
Yeah,
right?
He's taking some numbers from elite prospects, percent chance to become a star, percent chance to become a full-time NHLer. Rutger McGroarty is 6'1", 205, was the 14th pick in the 2022 draft and is 19 years old.
Right. That's just kind of an interesting dynamic. So that's the news there. The Penguins made a deal. We'll come back. We want you back with us after the break to talk more Pittsburgh sports. Heart disease kills one person every 33 seconds. Schedule a heart checkup at UPMC today. I think we've got Jeff Hathorn at 1:30, right?
Yeah, Jeff at 1:30 after the locker room with the Steelers is over.
So is Mike Tomlin talking to the media
today?
Tomlin
is speaking, yes.
As we speak?
Upcoming press conference at 1 o'clock, which is 1:02.
He should be up there. Good afternoon. Right, and generally these training camp press conferences last about 5 minutes.
Yeah, probably 10, 15.
Maybe 10.
It's not the half an hour ones that we're going to get in a couple weeks.
That's because the only reason those are half an hour is because he's got a TV show to do, right?
And you can listen to it right here.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, here's the other interesting tidbit, and you kind of threw this one out. Washington traded away a receiver to the Eagles. Weren't they one of the teams involved in the Ayuk Derby?
Yeah. Yeah, they were. And there was news out of 106.7, I think it is, that there's potentially going to be another move in terms of a wide receiver with Washington that's being floated out there. So who knows what that might be.
Yeah.
Brandon Ayuk.
Who knows?
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.